This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Many thanks to Jerry McNamara, who joined us in hour number one. We'll talk to the legendary John Desko coming up in about a half an hour, a men's lacrosse coach. And Wes, you alluded to the fact that so many different legends at Syracuse during our Syracuse takeover day. And you think, obviously, of a ton of student athletes in multiple sports. But in the world of broadcasting, tell you what, there may not be another school in the country that brings a who's list to the table like Syracuse.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even close when you think about the national impact, for sure. And the Newhouse School has chartered them all, as they say. And one of their proud alums joins us, pausing, if you will, on his hockey duties with NBC, Mike Tirico. Welcome to the ACC Network. Welcome to Packer and Durham. And I just want to cover one thing here before we get started. If I go the Dennis Duval, Jim Lee line, is that too far back, or Marvin Graves? I mean, what line do we need to draw athletically to get this conversation? I just want to make sure we're good.
It's kind of right about a little bit before Pearl. Louie and Bowie is there for me in the early 80s, but I wasn't in school then. I started, and Pearl and Raphael Addison and Wendell Alexis were the basketball team, and the football team was knocking on the door. Actually, the second game that I was a student for on campus was the game that Syracuse beat number one Nebraska in 1984. They lost to Rutgers, got shut out by Rutgers in the first home game that they played that year, and then they beat number one Nebraska. So those were that's my line of demarcation, so to speak. So, and okay, as you said, right, you said legend. The Packer said legend, which doesn't describe me, but I am old. So I will give you that.
You know, before we brought you on, Mike, we were showing shots of the old Carrier Dome, which is now the stadium, and how that's now transitioning as we speak. From a broadcasting perspective, when I say to you, hey, give me your best moments, I know you just went to the upset in Nebraska, but there have been so many incredible moments in that building, from a football, basketball, lacrosse. I can go on and on and on. It is going to be totally different when we finally get back to it and see it. The new version is the stadium. But when I say to you, Carrier Dome, what's the first thing that pops in your head?
Well, the first thing that pops in my head is going there in the student days before I did the college radio deal at WAR, college radio stations, where all of us, me, Dick Stockton, Marv Albert, Bob Costas, Sean McDonough, Dave Pasch, Ian Eagle, the whole group, Beth Mowins, we all worked there. And that's so near and dear to the hearts of us, even today, as the students continue that tradition. But before those days, going to the Georgetown games when there were 33,000 people, St. John's, Villanova, those landmark Big East programs, when the dome would just be packed, where you would sit, whether it was the student section or then you'd sit courtside covering the game, and you'd look all the way back over your shoulder, and people are sitting 50 yards away watching a basketball game. I don't think nationally it has been appreciated how great the basketball fans of Central New York have been, because those folks didn't see a lot of basketball. They were watching a bunch on the TV screen. And boy, they made for an atmosphere that I think helped define the Big East. You look at West Coast guys, talk to Mike Hopkins, now the coach at Washington, longtime assistant with Jim Boeheim and a player at Syracuse. Talk to that group, Stevie Thompson. Those West Coast kids would come home from high school and Big East, Big Monday would be on. And Big Monday kind of parked at the dome for half the games. And those are the special things for me. But the one thing I will tell you, Pack, for a memory, was going after 9/11, one of the first football games back was a Syracuse-Auburn game. And Mike Golick and I got to call that game. We were just driving. It was regional at that point. Travel by air was difficult, obviously, and concerning. And that was one of the most memorable games. The governor of New York, George Pataki at the time, was there. The national anthem. It was just such an emotional day. And Wes can tell you, because – Lord knows, Wes can give a run for the money as the voice of the Orange. Wes has done more Syracuse games than almost anybody over the last couple of years, right? But I will say this, that's the best place to call a football game in the world. I mean, you are in the perfect spot to call a game. It is low. It's close to the fans. You feel like you can see what's going on the sideline. So that spot in the stadium has been forever a really great place for all of us to call games from over the years.
Well, and the best part about it is, if they keep the media area in the same spot, and they put air conditioning in that place, it'll make September games bearable because, you know, Tennessee went in there one time. Carolina went in there one time. I'm trying to think. Wake Forest played in there early one year. And all three of them, teams from the south, go into Central New York, and it's a little warm on a Saturday. And, I mean, they come out of there with, you know, guys who grew up in Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina. They got more IV bags than the guys from Central New York who'd been practicing in there. That's the thing about it. You get an 82, 84-degree day in Central New York, and you go in that building, it's like 106. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. It can be just as warm as it can be cold when you'd go in for basketball practice to watch Boeheim and their guys shoot around before a game up there. But all the experiences, to think of football, basketball, lacrosse, women's basketball now playing there, and Coach Q has done such a great job getting that team to the Final Four, top 10 recruiting class over the last couple of years, and tremendous young women who are part of the program that's near and dear to our heart because my wife played basketball at Syracuse back in the 80s as well. So it's great to see that program do well, the women's lacrosse team that is always in the national top five. So many things happen in that dome. And then for any of us who went to Syracuse, that's the place where our commencement exercise is held. So graduation happened there as well. So it's one of the great buildings in all sports. And I know I say that with the pride of being an alum and connected to the university. But when you think of sporting venues in the country, football, basketball, lacrosse, men's and women's and basketball and lacrosse, the welcome to campus starts with the class of whatever, taking a picture there on the floor of the stadium, and your commencement happens in there. It's such an amazing place, and it's right in the heart of campus. And my wife and I got married on campus at just, you know, a couple hundred yards from the entrance to the stadium at Hendricks Chapel, right there at Syracuse. So the whole feel for that campus is just right there. And I love that it's not detached by a mile and a half. In a way, it's really a part of our campus. And watching the new structure go up has been super exciting. And I can't wait to get anywhere. I can't wait to get back there and experience it firsthand once it's open.
Mike, you can tell you had a love affair with your experience at Syracuse. How difficult is it now to look at the college landscape? And I've got a daughter that just left the other day for her senior year at Clemson. And you just kind of hope and pray for all the kids, right? I mean, if we have sports, great. But big picture, you know, kids are going there to get an education and move on in life. And you just want them to experience the greatest time of their life in college, whether it be Syracuse or UCLA or anywhere in between. And we are in such an unknown time that even today, from a football perspective, we don't know. Hey, are you going to be able to have in-person classes? I don't know. I don't think we've ever experienced anything quite like this. And, you know, I really hope and pray for the young people who have really taken ownership from a racial and social standpoint with this platform and having the leverage. But I just hope from an educational standpoint that they can maximize whatever they can possibly do here moving forward, because we simply just don't have any answers right now.
Pack, you're so right on. And I was driving from Indianapolis when there was an auto race at Indy, and I drove from where we live in Michigan to Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And I was listening to you, actually. You were talking about your daughter. It may have been in this time slot, one of the mornings or one of the afternoons. I forget. You're on all the time, so it's hard to figure out when you're not on. You're right. It is such a concerning thing. We have two kids. We're blessed with two kids who are college age. And I know college experience is not about being in your house or your basement trying to take classes. And that's why, in part, so many schools have done so much to try to get the kids on campus for the safest possible experience and something that can, at least in these very changed times, resemble the joy that we all had of being on campus and just figuring out life and figuring out how to live and figuring out how to grow up. Those are the formative lessons for so many of us. And yes, online education does provide a great opportunity, but any of us who were lucky enough to get away to go to school, we know that we figured out how to survive during those days and nights and weekend nights and months and years. And you just hope that the kids will have that at some point. I do have to tell you, being involved with Syracuse, and what I love about days like this is it's not just about football and basketball. You get the Olympic sports involved with the coaches on your show. And you guys talk about all the other sports in the conference beyond the big ticket items. And I think all of us are very appreciative of that. And bravo for y'all doing that on a regular basis on this show. But the campuses and the universities as well. And I know our chancellor, Kent Siverud, has been now appointed the head of the ACC board, as you have all the presidents there have kind of changed the structure of the conference a little bit. And what's been really neat to hear is that a lot of the ACC leadership at the executive level have been in consultation with each other and amongst the group of 15 to help best practices on different campuses. So if there's a lesson learned in Syracuse, it can be shared with the folks in Durham or the folks at Wake or the folks in South Bend. And that may help the college experience at ACC schools be the best it can in this difficult time. And that's one of the things about a conference that we never talk about in this world. We always talk about, hey, schedule and divisions and all this garbage. Like, we've lost the purpose of college athletics. We really have. We spend 98% of the debate talking about 2% of the athletes, the elite athletes who can make money, who are going to be pros. Most of the athletes on these college campuses, this is it for them. They have very, very talented things they bring to the school, and the school hopefully brings some stuff to them. But most of them go to school. Most of them go through this experience. Most of them are part of the student bodies on campus. And we just hope that that's the case, if not this semester, as we go down the line back to that normalcy pack that you were talking about before.
All right. Not going to lie to you. We did have a little method to the madness on getting you on the show today.
Okay.
Because in not only are you a proud Syracuse alum, graduate of Newhouse, the whole nine yards, but you also have done Notre Dame football for NBC the last couple of years. And now here come the Irish into the ACC. Who better to speak of the Irish in terms of what they bring to the table? Mark said this the day it was announced. We think Notre Dame's probably the second best team on paper in the ACC. You saw them several times last year. If the schedule gets played out, Mike, what do you think Notre Dame has that they bring to the ACC, and what should they be concerned about when they see the ACC unfold?
Are you asking me about a Notre Dame-Clemson game if I'm hoping for a 1-2 game in November? You're darn right I am. that game was sitting on the schedule, obviously, before the schedule changed. But, you feel even stupid talking about looking ahead to the college football schedule, right? You just want to see the kids get on campus and be safe. But we're sports fans. This is what we do for a living, and you can hope and dream. That's part of the beauty of sports. So what does Notre Dame bring? I'm going to tell you guys, I'll be as transparent as possible. I think from the outside, I didn't really have an appreciation for what Notre Dame football was all about. And this is now 4 years. This will be the fifth season I've been a part of the Notre Dame package on NBC. So you're there all the time. You know, you're there for every home game. They've built a great program. And Saturdays in South Bend are special. The scheduling relationship with the ACC is pretty unique, and it has benefited both sides. It gives kind of a core for Notre Dame. And I just want people to go back when they say, well, Notre Dame's coming in, and what should the back and forth be between the two sides? Look at the Notre Dame games that were on the schedule for ACC teams this year. Every ACC team moved that game from campus to a big stadium. That doesn't happen with all their other games. They do it because it's Notre Dame. Notre Dame is one of the few remaining national brands. I think it's great for the ACC that you get 5 or 6 games a year. I think this was a perfect opportunity for both sides in a unique time to try something different. I think you're going to see a pretty good football team. Brian Kelly's recruiting, coaching, strength, conditioning, everything about that program is in a really good place. Ian Book is an excellent quarterback. ACC teams that saw him know that. Syracuse fans saw that a couple of years ago when they played at Yankee Stadium. And Eric Dungy got hurt early, and that turned that game one more one-sided. But I think you're going to see a high-quality program. And you're going to see a program that when Notre Dame comes to town, nobody loves to beat any other team more than schools love to beat Notre Dame. But most of the time, they end up winning games. They are a true national brand that I think recruits nationally. That's why it's so important for them to maintain the USC game, the Stanford game, the Navy game, play somebody from the SEC or another conference every other year. They've been able to do that. They're in a unique spot, but I think you know, being one of the winningest programs in the history of the sport. They have earned that. And now they are up at that level. I mean, they played a game against Georgia, and Wes, you know how good Georgia is. They played two games against Georgia over the last couple of seasons that were sensational games, and they went down to Athens, and they proved they belonged on the field with Georgia. And Georgia was as good a team as any, save Alabama, in that season. So high quality, tough opponent, and when Notre Dame comes to town, it gets everybody's attention. So it's great for both sides this year. I think it's a one-year thing, but it's a great one-year thing for both parties. Mm-hmm.
Mike, the other thing, too, that really I think it's even a bigger picture. I think athletically and academically, they fit the profile, both sides. Notre Dame fits in naturally from an Atlantic Coast Conference perspective. And, again, I think all their other sports aside of football have blended in perfectly for the league. So, again, to me, right, it's a no-brainer across the board from that perspective. I do think, though, I had an issue with them in terms of, hey, you can't play for an ACC championship unless you're a full-time member. Well, guess what? For 2020, they're going to be a full-time member on your market, set, go, and hopefully we have games. But I want to go back real quickly to academically, because you talked about your great experience personally at Syracuse, and we normally ask this question to every student-athlete, but I'm going to ask it to you. What was your hardest class at Syracuse?
So I'm going to tell you a funny story. Why are you laughing so hard there, Wes? I'm going to tell you a funny story. So I was really, really fortunate and lucky that I had my first TV opportunity on the air as a sportscaster doing the weekend sports on the local newscast at Channel 5, WTVH in Syracuse, when I was in school. So the end of my junior year, actually the weekend after Keith Blanking Smart hit the shot to beat Syracuse in 1987, the Final Four, the next weekend was my first weekend on TV. So my whole senior year, I was in school full time and was the weekend sportscaster working 5 days a week. That happened to be my best academic semester. The last semester at Syracuse, and I'm juggling here, I got all A's except for one class, and it was broadcast news reporting. So here I am. I've got a job. I'm doing the 6 and 11 on weekends. I'm cranking out three packages a week for John Eaves, our sports director at Channel 5 in Syracuse. And I got a B in broadcast news reporting. And to the professor's credit, Professor Dwight Jensen, to his credit, it's because I wasn't there for every one of the labs, because I'd have to go out and do a story. So attendance was a big part of your grade. You weren't there, you couldn't get an A. Yeah. So that was my only B that semester. So point is, it's not your grades, it's what you do with your experience.
That's it.
But don't let my kids hear that, please.
Too late. It's too late. It's a great story.
I can see it now. Tirico, that B in broadcast news reporting, you're never going to make it, son.
Yeah.
I have not bounced back since. It's held me down for 30-some-odd years now, Wes, so I'm doing my best.
That's classic. Well, we appreciate the time. I know it's a crazy world that we're all living in, but keep up the great work, and we do appreciate you joining us.
Thank you guys for what you're doing. I do pop you guys on. It's great to hear ACC talk as we're part of the conference, and love doing that. And Wes, you've been a great friend, and you do an awesome job on the games and, of course, the Falcons too. And Pack, you are my favorite Packer brother of the two. For those who don't know, I get to work with Mark's brother Brant, who's one of the best golf producers out there. But man, is he's a pain. I'm a big Mark Packer guy.
Let me tell you, he is, as you well know, because you were at his wedding. You knew from day one Brant was going to be high maintenance. I'm the lowest maintenance Packer of the whole group this side of Barb. I can tell you that right now.
God bless his wife, man. She's a great golfer, a very accomplished golfer, but wow, she's the most patient person. But anyway, I love you guys. It's great to be on with you. Thanks for calling me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Take care, my man. We'll see you soon. Always great.
You got it, Wes.
Mike Tirico of NBC. Syracuse alum, proud alum, and great to have him with us on the Orange Takeover. John Desko coming up at 9:30 here on ACC Network ahead of a full day of Syracuse programming for you. And when we come back, a quick check of Dino Babers' schedule. Tommy DeVito hoping for a bounce back. Syracuse wants to push that offense to another level. Come back, check the schedule right after this on Packer and Durham.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the show. We've been so busy with guests and cutting up schedules. The world that we live in, we've kind of been reluctant in giving out that number. But you can jump on if you're in the mood. 844-SAY-ACCN. Many thanks to Mike Tirico, who just joined us. As you mentioned, John Hadesco coming up here momentarily, Wes. Legendary men's lacrosse coach at Syracuse. 5 national championships. But we do have football on the brain, and the schedule was released yesterday. When you take a snapshot of Syracuse, obviously, do you think 2020, if we're going to play a season, has to be a bounce-back year? Last year was certainly a disappointment for Dino Babers, given the double-digit win figure in 2018. But there are pieces in place that if they can get some help in certain areas, they can get back to their winning ways again.
Back the schedule, though, for Syracuse, it's a difference between home and away when you look at it on paper, because the teams they're going to play at home only had a winning percentage of about 42%, but the teams they're going to play on the road had a winning percentage of almost 72%. You just look at the road games, Carolina, Pittsburgh, Clemson, Louisville. Whoa, right? I mean, those are really, really thick. The home games, Duke, Liberty, Wake, Boston College, NC State. Of course, you throw Notre Dame into the mix on the back end as well for the Orange. And it's a tough schedule for Dino Babers. But the opener now, remember we talked about it when we mentioned the renovation at the Dome. The first couple of games were going to be on the road regardless of who they were. So you see at Carolina to start. And yesterday you had an opportunity to ask Mack Brown about seeing Coach Babers' club in the opener at Kenan Stadium in Chapel Hill in mid-September.
Well, then I said, but I asked Mack Brown yesterday, Syracuse is going to come to Chapel Hill for the first time since 2003. And Mack kid around with us recently said, hey, you know, we got our games. We just don't know who we're going to prepare for. Some of them are on, some are off. And obviously we know the UCF-Auburn games are gone. Pitt's gone off the schedule, which they thought they were going to have originally. But I asked Mack yesterday about now the fact that the ACC schedule is out. Syracuse comes to Chapel Hill for the first time since 2003. And his thoughts on Dino Babers' team.
Syracuse will be a great opponent for us. They've done a tremendous job. Dino is just taken over at Syracuse, and they didn't have the year he wanted last year, but usually they fight to come back. It's interesting. They changed defensive coordinator, so they've got a new guy. He's got a San Diego State, Arizona State background, and so we don't know anything about him. And when we saw our schedule a couple of weeks ago, we started working to find out things about them. So we're going into an opening ball game with a defense that we won't know anything about, but we've just got to figure and hope that he does what he's done in his past so we can be prepared.
Pack, what he's talking about is the 3-3-5, which is getting ready to be a very familiar front in college football because of the passing games and the hybrid positions. So Syracuse, I tell you, that's not the only change that has got to concern Carolina. Starling Gilbert running that offense has got to be another one too, because Syracuse's benefit will be they'll have a whole season of Phil Longo and a whole season of Jay Bateman to look at, and because Carolina brings so much experience back offensively, personnel, right? But the reality of it is, Carolina won't have much of an advantage at all. They'll have to start cross-weaving tape here to try and figure out packages with personnel. Look, the Tar Heels will be favored to win the game, but Syracuse, with what they're trying to do, and they've got just enough back, Mark, to be honest, there could be some points of concern for really both teams in that ball game. But the unknown will be one of Carolina's great hurdles to have to climb.
One of the things we've harped on, Wes, the last couple of weeks on the show when it comes to actually breaking down games is because of no spring, because of literally zero summer, and now we've got this condensed what are we doing in the fall routine, you really can't just assume things. And that's why I keep saying that, yeah, on paper, Clemson and Notre Dame look like 1 and 1A, right, in the league. You still got to go play. And this is an unlike any season in terms of preseason and expectations and breaking stuff down. you just kind of throw it away because you just don't know the mindset. I mean, I've heard so many conversations that we've had not only on this show but also on the afternoon show on Sirius XM 84 talking to coaches. I was talking to Chris Kleiman yesterday, the coach of K-State, that said, Pack, you know, I'm not really worried about the physical part of football. Our kids are rusty. Everybody's rusty. But football players eventually get that part. I'm more concerned on the mental aspect. Coach Capel was on with us yesterday from Pitt talking about his concern for the mental anguish that student athletes have gone through from the spring to the summer, getting back into the routine of the fall. I thought he was 100% right. As mentioned, Chris Kleiman yesterday talked about, well, I'm more concerned about mentally, where are my guys? Because they've kind of been scarred in the sense that, hey, what's going on? We're not together like we normally are in the spring, in the summer, in these fall camps. So when you hear Mac Brown give you that soundbite about getting ready for Syracuse, hey, we could take everything we learned in 2019 and go, well, what do you think? That team's going to be good, or that team's going to stink, or they got this or that. Quite frankly, we really don't know what a 2020 version of Syracuse or North Carolina or Notre Dame or Clemson or fill in the blank with your favorite team. You assume a lot of things, but man, this is why this is the biggest unknown, I think, ever in college football in our lifetime, because we don't know anything heading into this season.
That's exactly right. And when it comes down to put the ball on the tee, we're talking about hoping to, right?
Right.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. John Desko, another legend. We're just full of them on the Orange Takeover, aren't we? Legendary head coach of Syracuse's lacrosse program is going to join us. I mean, national championships. Just an unbelievable program. Looking forward to visiting with Coach John Desko when we continue on Packer and Durham on a Friday on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Friday, getting you ready for the weekend. It's all about the Cuse today, though. Takeover takes up 10 a.m. Got you covered all day, all night, into the weekend. It'll be a beautiful thing. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number. And, Wes, we've had a number of legendary all-time great coaches on this show. And making his debut now is John Desko, who's only won 5 national championships at Syracuse for men's lacrosse. He has been brilliant. He's been fantastic. He's been great from the get-go. Coach, we appreciate the time. It's a real honor having you on the show.
Well, thanks for saying so. Thanks for having me.
Man, there's so much to get into with you. You know, we've talked to so many coaches who were rocking and rolling in the spring. Life was good. Your team was playing lights out. And then all of a sudden, stop. And I mean stop, like hit a brick wall stop. How difficult was that, knowing that this team really had every inkling of being able to say, guess what, we are certainly good enough to win the national championship?
Well, you described it perfectly. We definitely hit that brick wall. We literally were practicing. I got called in from practice. This is a Friday afternoon. And we were all but loading up the truck to pack the truck up with all the guys' equipment to head down to Rutgers to play the Scarlet Knights. And I met with the athletic director, and the brakes were put on. And I had to walk back out to the team and tell them that, you know, our season's been temporarily suspended because we didn't know the extent of the virus at that time. And the look on our players' faces, it was not easy to tell them. And it was almost like somebody died. Guys just sat around the field, and I stayed out and talked with the seniors. And it was a tough afternoon.
Coach, it's been interesting to hear, and you mentioned this, and I want to follow up to it, because we've talked to several of your colleagues from spring sports, and Lars Tiffany was with us on Friday before we went off the air on a little bit of a show hiatus, and he said the same thing. To have to stand and tell your team this kind of news is almost a defeatist mentality, and that's not what you guys talk about. You know, losing and giving up is not what you guys talk about. And does that make it especially tough to then have to deliver a news to a team that, quite frankly, was playing very, very well and had all the looks and all the intangibles of being a team that could contend for a national title?
Well, you're right. You know, we the last couple of years, we played very very young. So we'll have freshmen and sophomores the last couple of years. And now we had some sophomores and juniors and a few seniors that had really, you know, paid their dues and had a lot of game experience. You know, we were 5-0, undefeated, number one in the country. And the guys were raring to go down and play our next game. They're really looking forward to the season. And I had to go out and be Mr. Doom. You know, it was a, like I mentioned, it was a tough time. And you could just tell the looks on their faces. And, you know, to be honest, I think that Duke had announced earlier that they had suspended their spring sports earlier in the day. So I think our guys had a little inkling of what might happen. Just so close to getting on the bus to head out was tough.
Coach, it's been really intriguing and eye-opening to talk to numerous coaches in different sports that have not had the concern so much of the physicality of their respective sport in returning, but the mental aspect. And I just had mentioned it before we went to break. What concerns do you have for your team moving forward mentally more so than physically?
Yeah, that's going to be a challenge. And there's still a lot of unknown, right? I mean, it's so important for these schools to get football out and playing games. Just from a financial standpoint, and the fans wanting to see their teams play. I mean, psychologically, I think the country needs sports to go on. I'm so used to turning on the ACC network or the television and watching a game of all sorts. It's been fun watching the professional teams play. The MLL and the PLL, and they seem to have done it pretty well. They've jumped into a bubble, and they seem to be taking care of themselves pretty good. But just to see live sports on television was a little bit of reality for me, you know, a little bit of the norm, if you will. So, we'll see. I think if football, with the number of players they have on their roster, if they can do it and do it safely, that'll open up the door for us. I think if it doesn't happen for football, then we'll see. I'd be surprised if we even had fall practice, but we'll see. There's still a lot of unknown. We've been pretty fortunate here in New York. You know, our governor has done a really good job of, you know, battening down the hatches and closed many things down except for what they deem to be the essentials. Even my family here, we haven't gone out a lot. We've stayed in and we've been very careful and have New York City in our state. And to be one of the safest states in the country has been, my hat's off to the governor for really getting the word out. He had meetings every day, informed people and businesses. And we've stayed pretty safe here. So now with the university opening up and students and players coming in, that have to quarantine from 14 days, those coming from hot states, I think that's a step in the right direction. But it's really, I think, as it come down to football, and then we'll learn from what they're doing and apply it to our sport and just see how it goes.
Coach, I want to spend a moment, if we can, talking about the legacy and the tradition of Syracuse lacrosse. I mean, you took over in 1999 and have won 5 national titles. The school has won 10. The lacrosse history there, I mean, heck, Jim Brown played lacrosse. I mean, it's immense. So when you take that job and you move into a program that's got tradition already in place, you got to build your own to a degree. What's that been like for you, and what have you learned in the process of 20-some years of Syracuse lacrosse under John Dusko?
Well, I was I played here at Syracuse. And I was assistant for Roy Simmons Jr., the coach before me, and for 19 years. So it's been, 40 some years, right, of being part of Syracuse lacrosse, either as a player or an assistant. And I think as an assistant playing for Roy Simmons Jr., or Roy Simmons Sr., I got to know him. He would come talk to the team. When I was on the team and got to know him a little bit before he passed. So I kind of understand Syracuse lacrosse. When I came here as a player, Syracuse wasn't doing very well. And I think my junior, senior year, we ended up going to the NCAAs. And then Coach Simmons Jr. asked me if I wanted to stay on as the assistant. The assistant coach, Jay Gallagher, had left the year that I finished. And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do at the time. So I said, that would be great. And I've been there ever since. So we won 6 national championships when I was an assistant coach under Roy. So I've got to see the growth of Syracuse lacrosse. Coming from a team that wasn't making the playoffs, this university started to put a little bit more financial help in, you know, from the athletic department into the sport. And so I got to see it kind of come from nothing to the tradition that we've been able to kind of maintain today. So I have a real appreciation for it. So it's been quite a ride. I'm very appreciative of the opportunities that I've been given, and then to turn around and become the head coach after Roy Jr. Retired has been a treat. You know, there have been only 4 coaches in the history of the sport here at Syracuse University. So I got a lot on my shoulders here.
Coach, I know this hasn't been approved yet, but it's coming in terms of name, image, and likeness. And we always associate that with football and basketball. But, you know, men's lacrosse, women's lacrosse at Syracuse is a big deal. And this may be an impossible question for you to answer. But do you think name, image, and likeness will have an impact on the sport of lacrosse nationwide?
You know, that's a great question. I think in our sport, since, you know, guys really aren't, or girls, guys aren't graduating, and then, I mean, there's a professional opportunity for them, but they still, I think they still need to go out and get a real job, right? Very few are making a living, you know, playing the sport at a professional level. So I think the focus is still going to be on the academics. So maybe in some situations, the name and likeness, I think it's great for the, you know, the players. I mean, especially some of the, you know, football, basketball players. But it could be a can of worms too, right? I mean, you know, some of it could be based on the alumni out there. And, you know, if you have a big alumni network that has done well financially, and, you know, are they going to pay more for name and likeness of the players on their particular team that they're supporting? So I'm waiting to see how it goes. In men's lacrosse, again, I think most of the players will choose the school that's the best fit for them academically, and it's going to help them when they get out in the real world the most for them. So I'm not sure. Time will tell. As you mentioned, I might not have the answers or be able to answer, but we'll see.
I tell you what, Coach, it's been a real treat to have you with us here today. Congratulations on the success you've had. We look forward to seeing you back out, hopefully in the spring. And maybe you do get some fall practices in. I hope so. And I know you got to be excited about the new building. It looks beautiful from what we've seen. Mark and I were commenting earlier in the program. I'm kind of excited to see what it looks like when it's finally finished.
Yeah, me too. You know, I think I've only seen the exterior of it. And I know it's only one stage. I know going forward in the dome that they'll be doing more on the inside in the future. So I'm excited to see the improvements, and even going forward to see more improvements in the future. Pete Sell has done a great job there. Our athletic director, John Wildhack, has been, you know, tremendous with us. So I think everything's going the right direction here.
Thanks, Coach. Stay safe.
Thanks again, Coach.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. John Dusko, the great lacrosse coach for Syracuse's men. Pleasure to visit with him as part of our Orange Takeover on a Friday of Packer and Durham. When we come back, we'll tell you about the programming today for Syracuse. Now, Pac, tomorrow is Virginia, and Sunday is Virginia Tech. And Wake Forest is Monday. And by the way, a couple of notes to share with you about women's golf in the ACC at the Amateur. We'll touch on that and more when we continue. Final segment on a Friday right after this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham, final segment of the week. You know, I got to tell you, Wes, this week has been better than last week. Was a rough week. This week's been better, but I'm about ready for some sipping water about 6:01 p.m. tonight. I think it might have my name on it about 6:01 p.m. the way I'm looking at it right now. So,
I understand.
But we got it's a big golf weekend. It's a big golf weekend, though, isn't it?
Yeah, we do. Not only do we have a lot of ACC alums participating in the PGA out at the TPC at Harding Park, we have got an outstanding representation of ACC women in the Women's U.S. Amateur at Woodmont Pack, including two that have appeared on the show, Emilio McLagia, who plays at Wake Forest, and her teammate Rachel Keene, right? Both have appeared on the show.
I've got the Keene piece of change here, right? She gave this to us, sent it to us, after taking care of business, winning the North and South Amateur, and the round of 32 is already underway this morning, and she is one of, you mentioned, six ACC women's golfers that are still alive and kicking in the U.S. Women's AM, which will be completed this weekend, so we wish all of them the very best on that front, and you mentioned everything going on at Harding Park out in beautiful San Francisco. The first major for the men professionally, the PGA Championship. And, of course, Brooks Koepka, Florida State grad, looking to go back to back to back. And he got off to a great start yesterday with a little 4-under par 66. And anything that takes place in San Francisco is going to be incredibly picturesque and beautiful and gorgeous. And, again, I told you I didn't have a chance to watch any of it yesterday because I was so busy. But looking forward to seeing some of that this weekend. That will be fantastic. I can only imagine how beautiful it is.
Pack, I have lost my IFB, so I didn't hear a word you said.
You didn't miss a thing.
I'm sure it was really good, but.
No, you didn't.
Oh, there we go.
You're now back. Okay, good.
You're now back.
You didn't miss a thing.
So I didn't miss a thing? Okay. By the way, we're just getting this news, and I don't want to end the week on a sad note, but Chuck Walsh, the basketball SID at Florida State, has confirmed something we saw a few minutes ago. Former Florida State basketball player Michael Ojo has passed away. 27 years of age, of a heart attack in Serbia, apparently practicing today. A guy who... You know, we've talked about characters of ACC basketball, a young man whose skills really developed under Leonard Hamilton, was a fascinating person to talk to on our visits down there for games and things like that. And unfortunately, Michael Ojo, who was a big part of some Florida State success in the last few years, has passed away in Europe at the age of 27, apparently due to a heart attack. Our thoughts and prayers with not only Michael's family, but also the Florida State basketball family. That's a tough way to end the week, but we wanted to share that with you as well. Monday's show will be the Wake Forest takeover here on Packer in Durham. And over the weekend, you'll get Virginia's takeover tomorrow and Virginia's Tech's takeover on Sunday. If you're looking for the Cavaliers, there's Pitt football from last year. There's the 1186 to Omaha. Men's basketball from 2018, football from 2004, and Virginia Florida State from 2005 in football as well. For the Hokies on Sunday, you'll get the three-day weekend show, which premiered earlier in the spring. You'll get softball from 2020, men's basketball from 2007. We'll get to see Coach Greenberg in the catcher's stance in front of the bench in Blacksburg when they get Duke, and we'll also see men's basketball from 2009, and you see softball as well. It's a full day of Virginia Tech, starts at midnight and goes to midnight on a Sunday here on ACC Network. So full takeover for Virginia tomorrow and Virginia Tech on Sunday, and then we'll have Wake Forest on Monday and the addition of Packer and Durham. And then we'll do those other four schools the rest of the week, Mark, and we'll talk about that on Monday so we make sure we get it right.
Yeah, let's make sure we get it right, Wes.
We would be me. And Tuesday will be Louisville. Wednesday will be Miami. Thursday will be Virginia. And Friday will be Virginia Tech.
You passed the class. You got it. You got it figured out. It's beautiful. Can I say one thing before we get out of here for the week?
Sure.
I am really, really mad at Ohio State and Michigan. And I'm going to tell you something real quick. Apparently, Jim Harbaugh and Ryan Day got after each other in a teleconference. Yeah. And Harbaugh has accused Ohio State of cheating. And Ryan Day basically said, hey, why don't you coach your team? I'll coach mine. And then apparently at a staff meeting afterwards said, hey, no mercy rule. If we get a chance to lay 100 on them, we're going to hang 100 on them. I'm mad at them not because of what they said. I'm mad at them because it just gets you in the mood for the college football season. And I don't care if it's a Big Ten story, a Pac-12 story, SEC, or anybody in between. When I heard that this week, I'm like, man, we've got to have college football. When they start barking at each other on a teleconference call, it's go time. But nevertheless, great job by everybody behind the scenes, and hope everybody has a good weekend.
Yep. Thanks to Drew Brooks, Josh Macri, Jim Milkovitz. Stay safe, everyone. We'll see you Monday on Packer and Durham.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.